I've got to see some kind of an angle to where I'm going to be able to see a return if we're going to really invest in a in an artist. But again, it's like it doesn't have to be a cookie cutter thing. If I, like, just because it's different doesn't mean it can be successful, and doesn't mean it can't make money.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to Nashville's AIMP Pubcast, a one-on-one talk with Nashville's biggest and brightest independent music publisher. I'm Michael McAnally-Baum, I'm the president of SMAC, and I'm the secretary of Nashville's Association of Independent Music Publishers. Today's guest is Chris Van Belkom, also known as The Falcon. Falcon's a vice president over at Combustion Music, and he's worked with some superstar writers, producers, and artists, including Ashley Gourley, Brett James, Blair Daly, Matthew West, Matt Jenkins, there's more, Kelly Archer, Zach Crowell, Brett Tyler, and Nathan and Caleb Followell, to name a few.
Leanne Phelan gave me the name Falcon back in 2004 when I started at Combustion. Well, I worked for a guy named Chris Farron. It was Chris and Chris, and it was too much to keep up with. And so one of our writers said, she said Van Belkom. Van Belkom is my last name. And she said to Blair Daly, she said, Van Belkom. And he goes, The Falcon. And it just stuck. So I wish it was a better story. I wish I'd swooped in and saved a drowning child like a falcon or done something cool, but not at all. It's just a.
It was a mispronounced. Much like they talk about Miranda Lambert and how she did the song Fine Tune, turned it in, and the publisher thought the word was pontoon, and that gave Natalie idea to write a song called Pontoon.
I love that. That's so great.
I'm pretty sure Pontoon paid more than Falcon, at least so far. But
someone will write Falcon one day, and I'll hope to get 5% or maybe 10.
Maybe good. 15. You're in management a little. So tell me a little bit about what drew you to the music industry.
I've always been drawn to music, and I grew up playing in rock bands and stuff. And actually, when I took the job at Combustion, it was between, I had a gig playing bass for this band that was going out to open up for 30 Seconds to Mars, and then I had this part-time job at Combustion. I ended up taking the Combustion job, which ended up being a smart decision because I didn't realize how much I didn't want to be in a van that smells like feet and farts for months at a time.
Life on the road, not for you.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right.
So did you go to school for music?
I went to MTSU with the music business degree. I interned for a company called Cal4 that's now Spirit Music. And I interned around, and I had heard about the girl that was doing the just kind of tape room front desk job at Combustion. She was getting ready to move to Austin, so I just kind of started. I took an internship there knowing that hopefully I'd be able to
make
stick
your mark.
Around. Yeah, right.
Right.
I changed all the passwords, all the computers, and all of a sudden they couldn't get rid of me. So
job security and internet security.
That's right.
All in one. Yeah. What do you get most excited about when you go into work every day?
I love hearing new songs. I love hearing work tapes and hearing a song from the very beginning and watching it go through the process, going through the kind of the demo process, which is far, far less these days because there's so many great producer writers. But I love hearing something from the beginning and then watching it all the way through and becoming like a number one song. Like watching that process go down is exciting, and it's addicting, and it's thrilling, and it's what you ultimately get money for making those things do well. But the personal kind of rush you get from having something to do with a song that becomes a number one, or just even hearing it on the radio for the first time, like it's a rush.
It's a huge rush.
And actually, it gets me, like, this sounds so dumb, but like I get all emotional all the time. I just watched our guys work with this band called Walker McGuire, and they played the Opry over the weekend, and I couldn't go, but I watched the Facebook live feed of it, and I was just tearing up. I was so proud. I get so proud of our guys, you know, like watching these dudes go from just a couple of dudes making country music to playing the Opry, you know, that's such a big deal, and it's so cool to watch them take these steps. I mean, that's a small step at the beginning of their career. They got a song just in the 40s right now. You know, I have no doubt it's going to end up being a success, but it's just cool watching it from the beginning and watching these little things that mean so much to these guys. It makes my heart feel good.
Yeah, and conversely to that, what's the thing you don't look forward to every day? What's your least favorite part of your job?
You know, once in a while we get a song that I know is just a super hit, and it's like 9 times out of 10 there ends up being a bit of a battle between those songs where one artist will want it and another one will want it too. And we end up kind of having to put out fires, having to try to make everybody happy, but also having to try to do what's right for the song. But you're going to, I don't like disappointing people, I guess, and having to tell somebody they can't have something that they, we all know when there's a huge song. And it's like having to disappoint. I hate having to do that. Having to pull a song from one person to give it to another, because the person I'm pulling the song from, I want them to record other songs on their artists too. You know, it's hard to kind of juggle those relationships.
We've actually got to work together too on the Sam Hunt project.
And yeah.
Talk a little bit about Zach and what it's been like working with him and just seeing more opportunities open up for him.
The idea of the producer writer in Nashville is a relatively new thing, probably only a decade now, you know, where that's really been a thing. And he was kind of at the forefront of that. And what was kind of cool about watching him develop was, guy that works with us named Kinley Flynn. He had kind of taken him under his wing early on, and I saw just the level of writers. He was getting in with a bunch of developing beginning writers and a bunch of kind of random artists. And then I'd look at his calendar and there would be these like pretty big writers on his calendar. I was like, how did that happen? It's like, well, this developing guy wrote with this guy and he ended up bringing him in. He'd like the word kind of traveled on Zach, and it happened really organically, and just people wanted to write with Zach because he was bringing something cool to the table, something new and different to the table. And that was Sam early on, when Sam's first write with Zach was that song Cop Car that Keith Urban ended up cutting. And that was, we knew that they had something special at that moment. Like, it was like, that was Sam's whole, I feel like that song particularly captures what Sam kind of is, you know. It like, right. It is Sam Hunt, you know. It's that story is about his life, you know. And that's when we first realized they were kind of onto something. And then, yeah, I guess then Shane started writing with Zach and Sam.
Yeah.
And that was when Zach came and played me the demo for Breakup in the Small Town. That was when I was like, oh shit.
This is big.
And that's, I was so, that was an example of, you know, a lot of times records can kind of be over A&R'd, and this one was perfectly done. Stephanie Wright killed it on that record, because I remember he came in and played that for us. And that is not a country song. You know, it's a pop song with a very country lyric. And when I first heard it, I was like, I just hope they let this be what it is. I know it's not country, but it's whatever it is, it's awesome. And it's really well done. Let's hope they let that be what it is. And they sure did. And they put it on the radio, which is insane.
Still amazing, yeah. I mean, we can even fast forward now to Body Like a Back Road. I mean, it's knocking on the doors of being the most popular country song of all time.
We're watching it like climb the top 40 chart, and just like, I don't, you know, they it started happening organically too. That I think the label was telling us that pop radio started playing it, so they started working it there, which is, it's one of the more fun songs to watch. You know, there's some of those songs that enter the charts and you're just kind of watch it just like, I don't know what it's gonna, you know.
Yeah,
you know, you're very unsure about. But with Sam, he's such a powerhouse as an artist, and that song is so good. It's so easy, it's so easily digestible. It's like, it's no surprise that it's a mega hit.
You guys also have songwriters that you're helping kind of put their act together to make an artist attempt. What is that like for you when a songwriter comes to you and says, hey, I've got something I want to say, and can you help me say it?
Well, I gotta believe in them as an artist first. You know, that's where that all kind of begins. I gotta really believe in the act and see the potential at radio and see how it will uniquely work its way into the market. Because there's so many artists battling for the same slot, you know. It's like, it's such an overcrowded room. But
is it hard for you to balance out like things that you're like, God, this music's going to be great, but it might not have a commercial avenue? How do you make that? How do you square that? Like, things that are, you know, what's working on country radio and even in the streaming space tends to be one thing, but then there sometimes are things that just don't live in any actual avenue. How does your brain process?
That's what you guys are doing such a good job of, is boldly kind of just making, creating a space for it, especially with the genre lines blurring so much. There's about to be like one radio station. It's almost, you know, it's all kind of, it's all so nebulous now, but,
along those lines, it's tough. Cause you know, you got to put your money into this. It's not like as though you're like, oh yeah, we're just going to put some music out on you. I mean, it's a pretty hefty investment, even if you try to do it as simply as possible.
Yeah, we're definitely, I've got to see some kind of an angle to where I'm going to be able to see a return if we're going to really invest in in an artist. But again, it's like, it doesn't have to be a cookie cutter thing. Just because it's different doesn't mean it can be successful, and doesn't mean it can't make money, you know?
Well, speaking of money, too, what is your gut feeling about what's happening with streaming and what that's going to do to publishers? I mean, you're a successful music publisher with a lot of different income streams, mm-hmm. but mostly you're on big songs, so there's you know, you can weather this. What is your gut telling you about the direction we're heading?
Well, I see only blue skies. The good thing is that the publishing side of the streaming rates are still messed up, but they're growing exponentially every day. So even though our piece is small, it's getting bigger every day. So I feel confident they're going to be able to fix that. And in the meantime, we're trying to get a piece of the master side that's making so much money. You know, we're trying to find ways to control some masters. I mean, there's real money out there. And that's another good thing too, with these developing artists, like we're able to cut an EP for under $10,000, and it doesn't take that many streams to make that up. So right. I've got a lot of artists that we're cutting these records for kind of relatively cheap on the front end, and then they recoup pretty quickly if you get them on the right playlists. And then that's just money. We tend to, like a lot of our deals, we tend to split those with our guy. Like once it recoups, we split it, and that money just goes, instead of, you know, a lot of the tours that they're doing at this point are $500 and $1,000 guarantees that hardly even cover their band and their van and their, you know, their gas. I mean, it's like a lot of that money is just going back to feed the machine and make it work. And I feel like that makes our, like, you know, those developing artists, to get a check for the music that you've made is a good feeling. I feel that's good overall.
It's good business.
Yeah, it's for these artists to watch their businesses starting to make money. You know, their entity is a business, and for it to start to make money, that feels good. And that, I feel like that just puts good mojo on the whole project and gets it feeling good. I ultimately want all these guys to get record deals and be huge stars, you know, so.
Yeah, and mojo's contagious too.
Right.
A lot of our listeners are going to be independent publishers who are either looking to take their publishing company to the next level or, you know, maybe they're just getting into the game to begin with. And a pretty common question that comes up is, for successful publishers, what is it about somebody who you meet that makes you want to just see about opening up potential co-writes? Or how are you introduced to new companies? And who's done that pretty successfully for you?
I guess a lot of when I'm setting up a new co-write, a lot of it has to do with the writer, and a lot of the times I'm introduced to the writers just from running into people around town. I really feel like it's, especially in Nashville, the way the publishing world works, you have to immerse yourself in the community and be a part of it. And like, I think the majority of the great writers that I hear from other publishers are just because I've run into them or gone to lunch with them or seen, or, you know, I see a lot of people at like write arounds and stuff. People invite me out to write arounds and stuff where I'll see an artist player, like a writer, and I'll be blown away by them and want to further integrate them into what like the group of writers that we have.
It's pretty consistent that networking is, I mean, especially in Nashville, it's so, you can't be successful in a, that's not an island. There's no vacuum.
Yeah.
There's no self-made, I did it, that doesn't happen
here.
Yeah,
there's always exceptions to the rule, but got it, like, what I love about the Nashville music community just in general is everybody's so supportive of each other. If something happens devastating to somebody, the entire business surrounds, you know, just surrounds them with love. Like, like one of our writers is, like, kind of word got out that their wife had like a health issue, and I got texts from so many people like just asking about him and just say, hey, is he okay, is his wife okay. I think that's one of the cool things about the way our business works. So like the community that we have here is, I think, unique to the entire music business.
Is there a songwriter right now that you don't have any connection to, but you are really digging what they're doing?
Yeah, there's a guy named Michael Hardy that's my favorite writer in Nashville right now, and he's starting to get some cuts. Everybody will know who he is in 2 years' time. I have no doubt.
You heard it here first in our podcast.
Yeah, he writes for Cobalt, and I just love everything he does. His voice is really cool, and his songs are really unique, and he's surrounded himself with good people, and I just see him being a power horse megastar writer.
Who's an artist who's developing that you don't have direct ties to, but who you're just really digging?
I would say Cassie Ashton writes for Beth, works with Beth and Creative Nation, and she's a spitfire nutcase, awesome. I don't know how to even describe her.
Described as an artist.
Yeah, she's a true unique artist, and I feel like she's gonna fill this hole that the female country landscape has been missing for the last decade. I think she's gonna come in and freak everybody out in the best way.
Yeah,
I'm excited to see what she does. Her music is so unique. She's so unique, and I'm just pumped to see. I'm pumped to see where that ends up.
Something that came up in another interview, they talked about like time, just being respectful because we are all so busy. Being respectful of trying to square having an opportunity equally with respecting someone's time during a pitch or you know, like I mean, I think we're all pretty open books and we'll meet anyone, but we just can't sit down for an hour with anybody.
Yeah. It's funny. As much as you try to create new relationships with other publishers, sometimes there's those calls where you got to say, hey man, this writing combo just doesn't work. You know, there comes that time where you just got to look at each other and be like, dude, the last 10 songs I've written are not great. Let's just pause this. You know, we're all friends, but sometimes you have to have those awkward conversations, but you got to have them. You got to keep quality up, you know?
And part of your job as a publisher is so your songwriters don't have to do that. I know that comes up too when you're like, hey, this isn't really working for me, but you've got a great relationship with this writer and their publisher. Yeah. So, yeah.
I had to do that. There was recently, actually, like, can I be the one to take the black eye? And that's fine. That's part of our job. You know, I got thick skin. Let them be mad at me, you know? Yeah. I'll take the bullet for this. You know.
Because the minute the situation changes, you'll be the first one to...
Well, a lot of times, especially with artists, if there's like an artist that's kind of in a floundering spot and there's a writer they're really wanting to get with, it's like, I got to be concerned with my guy's time. And if this, you know... I guess I'm just a lot of times mindful of how much time somebody's spending on a project. Yeah. You know, typical record has 11 songs on it. And it's like, if one of my writers has written 20 songs with this artist and has missed their entire thing, then let's try to concentrate on something else. Obviously, these songs they're writing aren't good enough to make that record. So maybe that writing relationship isn't right. You know, maybe we move on to another thing. And that's okay. You know, it's all right. Not everybody you connect are gonna hit it off.
A lot of the publishers that I've talked to, they also use the analogy of being in the publishing world is a marathon. It's not a sprint. There's never a finish line.
Yeah. We're all in it for the long game. You see a lot of companies come and go in 2 years' time, and it's like, I feel like in the publishing world, you have to dedicate at least 5 to 10 years into a company to really see what its potential could be. But a lot of people, some people don't have that risk tolerance, but that's why I just wouldn't invest any money in the music business.
Yeah, I was like, go invest in the stock market right now. It's definitely a better investment. This Nashville AIMP podcast was brought to you by our friends at Anderson Benson Insurance. Experienced, locally owned brokers who take a creative approach to simplifying insurance and risk management. These guys are relationship people, and they have the experience to understand all the aspects of our ever-changing industry. They prepare all their clients, including me, for their next level of success. I have all my insurance accounts with them, and Anderson Benson is an important part of my team. I have cell phone numbers if I have questions, and they're always available to help. Look them up at AndersonBenson.com.